This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, August 6th, 2013. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The Banff Mountain Film Festival World Tour will present a big screen journey from exotic locations and whitewater paddling to climbers reaching the highest mountain peaks. Banff Film Festival will visit Fayetteville at the UARC Global Campus Auditorium on Thursday, September 12th and Friday the 13th. Tickets and more information are available at FayettevilleBanff.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, how community clinics will change and not change with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. We continue our series on how the act will affect Arkansas. Plus, a warm documentary made during the latter part of Levon Helm's life will have its Northwest Arkansas premiere Friday night at the Fayetteville Public Library. We'll hear from the film's director.
Plus, Joe Neal returns with the sounds of his high-flying neighbors, American Crows. And the music of Nora Jane Struthers and The Parting Line shines in their 2013 release, Carnival. They're coming to Fayetteville later this month as part of the Roots Festival, and we'll have a review of the album.
But first, a 22-member legislative task force is considering recommendations for a new Arkansas veterans home with four cities named as potential sites. The group met at the state capitol yesterday to review criteria such as size, location, and funding. Several members brought up assisting veterans who might not fall under existing funding structures. Committee Chair Senator Jane English of North Little Rock says that may mean asking for additional funds.
What does it really cost to have other kinds of folks in the home who have some mental problems and are not maybe covered by Medicaid, but might be covered by some other program, and so that we make sure that we are operating, as you said, it's a business. This is a business. So is this something that the state is going to need to support with some funding as well?
Earlier this year, lawmakers set aside $7.5 million from the state surplus for the home. The State Department of Veterans Affairs is seeking about $18 million in matching funds from the federal government. The cities considered for the home are Fort Smith, Russellville, Jacksonville, and Benton.
U.S. Department of Agriculture officials are urging public and nonprofit organizations in Arkansas to consider becoming sites for summer food service programs next year. Kevin Concannon, Undersecretary for USDA Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, says providers can help ensure disadvantaged children in Arkansas won't go hungry just because school is out.
There are still literally millions of kids across the country who don't do so well over the course of the summer, and their teachers tell us, as well as the research, when those kids get back to school in the fall, they don't do as well if they've had a summer of uncertainty. Will there be supper tonight or not? And to the extent that we can make sure that they have routine access to healthy foods, they'll do better, both from a health point of view, but also from a learning point of view.
Concannon says the program is completely funded by the federal government and covers the cost of up to three nutritious meals and snacks a day for Arkansas children.
Early voting begins today on a zoning issue in Russellville. Voters are being asked to decide a rezoning ordinance passed earlier this year by Russellville aldermen. The rezoning would allow for construction of a Walmart neighborhood market near the intersection of Main and Vancouver Streets. A yes vote would uphold the city's zoning decision. A no vote would strike it down. The Russellville Area Chamber of Commerce has stated its support of passing the zoning issue. Jeff Pipkin is the director of the chamber, and he says there are a number of reasons the chamber has lent its support to the issue.
It is a business that is something that we feel like would add a lot to our community. It's an additional grocery store. There currently are only four grocery stores in Russellville for 28,000 people, and most communities of that size have as many as 8 and 9 grocery stores. So I think it's an opportunity for us to have another option, more options. Also, the job creation is supposed to create somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 to 85 new jobs. And those are the main reasons that we're supportive. We feel like we wouldn't be much of a chamber of commerce if we didn't support commerce.
Pipkin says the chamber is supporting the passage in a number of ways.
What we've done is we have helped form a committee that we have referring to as the Committee for Community Progress that is registered with the State Ethics Commission's office as somewhat of a clearinghouse to raise funds and expend funds for the campaign to ask the voters to come out and vote in support of the rezoning.
Early voting began today and will continue through Friday and again on Monday. The actual election day is 1 week from today. Votes can be cast at the Pope County Election Headquarters. A group has coalesced in opposition to allowing the rezoning to stand, but phone calls to Richard Peel, a Russellville attorney listed as one of the heads of the Skyline Joint Ventures LLC Legislative Question Committee, were not returned.
Though the vast majority of restaurants in Bentonville do pay their hotel-motel restaurant taxes in a timely manner, the city's Advertising and Promotion Commission is trying to get the handful of businesses with outstanding tax payments to pay what they owe. Kayleen Griffith, the director of Bentonville's A&P Commission, says roughly 97% of restaurants pay their HMR taxes on time.
We haven't had an issue on it since I've been here in the last 8 years. You know, we've had a couple that haven't paid. They may have closed down, but it was less than $20 or $40. Their last couple months were very low. So, you know, those low amounts, you know, on that type of setting. But normally, we have not had an issue with this. This is the first time that we have not had payment over multiple months.
Griffith says because Bentonville doesn't issue business licenses, the only means for getting overdue HMR taxes from restaurateurs is by placing liens on their businesses or personal assets. She says there are only three businesses that still owe outstanding HMR taxes. The three restaurants owe an estimated $9,000. Griffith says the total is estimated because the A&P Commission doesn't know how much businesses owe until the businesses remit the taxes.
An Arkansas Game and Fish Commission officer who died in a May flood in Scott County is now being honored by the commission. Officer Joel Campora has been named the Game and Fish Commission's Officer of the Year after he responded to a 911 call to help women who were swept away by the flooding when he, too, was taken by the flood waters.
Partly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers and a low of 71 degrees in northwest Arkansas and a low of 76 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny with a slight chance of showers and a high of 96 in northwest Arkansas tomorrow and a high of 101 with heat index near 107 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a low of 71 in northwest Arkansas and a slight chance of showers with a low of 76 in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. In Arkansas, medically underserved individuals can secure care at a dozen federally qualified community health centers. Some patients pay cash on a sliding scale based on income. Others are enrolled in Medicare or Medicaid. Under the new health care reform private option in Arkansas, there is the possibility Medicaid income for these clinics could be reduced. In the third part of our series on how the Affordable Care Act might alter the medical landscape in Arkansas, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Frolick has this report.
This looks like a mess.
Community Clinic of Northwest Arkansas Executive Director Kathy Grisham shows off a new 7,500 square foot wing expansion at headquarters in downtown Springdale.
And we've added, I think, 15 exam rooms so that we will have two more providers joining us for family practice. And adjoining us.
2 years ago, Grisham was awarded $500,000 in federal funding to expand, money made available to federally qualified community health centers, part of an $11 billion earmark under health care reform. Community Clinic operates medical offices in Springdale, Rogers, and Siloam Springs, several dental clinics, and a growing number of school-based health centers. But unlike conventional clinics, patients are assigned case managers to better guide health decision-making. And growing the clinic remains an imperative, Kathy Grisham says.
We saw 30,000 patients last year, which is an increase of 100% in 5 years.
But 90,000 patients had to be turned away. 53% of community clinics patients are children covered under Medicaid SCHIP programming, and many of their parents have no insurance at all.
Many of them who have not had insurance have received care here at the clinic on a sliding fee scale. So we're anticipating that most of them will now have insurance to cover the care that they're receiving here at the clinic.
because starting January 1st, an estimated 250,000 Arkansans will be able to enroll in Medicaid, but only Arkansas is expanding Medicaid differently. Under the Arkansas Independence Health Care Act of 2013, passed by the state legislature last April, newly eligible recipients, single adults who earn 133% of poverty level, or around $15,000 a year, will be directed to seek private coverage in the state's new insurance marketplace. Their premiums will be paid for by the Fed. But the Department of Human Services, which oversees Medicaid in Arkansas, by law, is in the process of seeking a waiver from the U.S. Department of Human Services Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to allow insurance companies to negotiate their own rates with providers, cutting reimbursements to community clinic by as much as 25%. Again, Kathy Grisham.
The waiver was only introduced or made public June 24th. And no one knew what was contained in it.
Community Clinic, Grisham says, has operated for years in the black. It's among 12 federally qualified community health centers, or FQHCs, operating on 83 sites across the state, which are at risk of losing significant income, says Sip Mouden. She's chief executive officer of the Community Health Center of Arkansas, based in Little Rock.
The waiver that we have taken exception to is a waiver of the Social Security Act 1902A15. And what that really is saying is DHS Medicaid wants to eliminate our what we call our PPS rate.
The Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP Benefits Improvement Protection Act of 2000 established for FQHCs a prospective payment methodology, PPS for short, an enhanced Medicaid per-patient visit rate based on reasonable costs of care. Last count, Arkansas FQHCs served 165,000 patients, nearly 66,000, more than one-third, with no insurance.
We can't change what the federal government has dictated to us by law, what we must provide to everybody, regardless of the patient that comes in. It's also going to affect the fact that our health centers may have to close some sites. They may have to lay off physicians and nurses and dentists and support staff because the revenues will not be there.
Sip Mouden laid out her case at a joint meeting of the State House and Senate Public Health Committee in Little Rock on July 25th, leading up to the deadline for submitting the waiver August 2nd.
Our federally qualified health centers are very efficient and very effective and do a great job not only providing quality of care, but saving the state dollars for unnecessary hospitalizations, emergency room use, and for specialty care referrals, because we're working with them on preventative care and primary care.
At the hearing, Mouden revealed potential financial losses based on the last calendar year.
If, in fact, the 1115 waiver, 1902A, had been approved back during the calendar year of 2012, and our projections range from $8,650,000 to $13,630,000.
Added to that, an additional $22 million in uncompensated care, Mouden says. In an email exchange with the Department of Human Services, spokesperson Amy Webb wrote that in order to implement what was outlined in the Arkansas Healthcare Independence Act, her department has to seek the waiver, one of several from the federal government. A decision is pending within 90 days.
Our community clinics provide a safety net for thousands of Arkansans all across our state.
Greg Letting, House Minority Leader and Democratic State Representative, District 86, Fayetteville, says he and other legislators are exploring options to help.
The governor and a few others have talked about setting up, finding some funds to set up a reserve fund that can help keep the community clinics going if they do begin to see their revenue stream decline while they figure out a way to adapt to this new system. That's been one of the discussions. I know there was some talk of perhaps pulling out the 1115 waiver from the private option legislation, but that's just not at all possible.
In the meantime, Kathy Grisham, who 15 years ago began turning a tiny charity health clinic into a federally qualified regional health center, remains on schedule to complete expansion of Community Clinic of Northwest Arkansas.
This will be our waiting room. Oh, and there are cabinets that will be installed. Looks good, doesn't it?
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about this issue, you can visit the National Association of Community Health Centers at nach.com. And you can learn more about the Community Clinic of Northwest Arkansas online at communityclinic.org.
Hi, welcome to the law offices of Saul Goodman & Associates. From parking tickets to mass murder, from slip and fall to bond fraud, Saul Goodman & Associates.
That's the character Saul Goodman, the sleazy lawyer from Breaking Bad, which returns Sunday. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Bob Odenkirk about playing Saul. Better Call Saul on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air tonight at 6 on KUAF.
Arkansas lays claim to quite a history of entrepreneurial activity. Spend even a day here and you'll likely hear the stories about Sam Walton, J.B. Hunt, or John W. Tyson. The spirit is still being cultivated in Northwest Arkansas with competitions, business incubators, and centers designed to help businesses develop, like the Iceberg co-working site in downtown Fayetteville. In central Arkansas, another engine for entrepreneurs is gearing up to try to find the next Sam Walton. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently discussed the proposed Fab Lab with developer Greg Nabholz. The project is designed to bring new business minds to downtown North Little Rock in hopes of having some of those ideas spread around the state.
What got you interested in downtown North Little Rock to begin with? When you first started working on developments down there, it was a sleepy little sister city to what was happening in Little Rock's downtown river market.
Sure. Well, it was we got the opportunity to be introduced to John Godin and Harold Tenenbaum, who are two business partners in our New Argenta Fund. And it was, I had always had that interest in downtown and revitalizing cities' cores. And it was just an opportunity. It was a great investment opportunity for our company to partner with them. And from there, I've lived in downtown for 5.5 years and really enjoying it.
Tell me what, before we get to this particular project, tell me what was kind of the first big phase. What do you think got downtown Argenta over the hump? Because there was a period of time where there was just a little bit of activity, and now it's flourishing down there.
Well, I think the key that's unique in many ways is that you had the full participation of the city. You had a city, the mayor, the leadership there, that and the city council that understood and got the vision of what a strong downtown means for the entire city. And you also had a very engaged nonprofit sector. The CDC, Argenta Community Development Corporation, was already in existence and was a big part in getting a lot of the residential component of Argenta revitalized. And so when you have that, bringing in also the private sector, those three stools really led to all the other things that really make a great place, placemaking.
You started a lot of this, though, right before the economic crash in 2008.
Yeah, timing is everything. We're probably, exactly. Well, the lucky thing that I guess you can say the silver lining in all that is that in 2009, when in the midst of this crash, is when the city, the private sector, as well as the nonprofit sector, we all came together and did the master plan for Argenta, which is was completed in 2010. And so that gave us some time to really sit back and plan and do everything right. And since that time, been in the process of getting all the necessary pieces of the puzzle, put together, the entitling of the properties, all the infrastructure work and getting everything teed up, for a better word.
Sewer, roads, water,
to,
all that
to
kind
really
of stuff,
to where
right?
Now we can really take off. And we're probably 2 years, behind where we'd really like to be, but the good thing is the timing of everything, and with all the trends of and the big interest in just people wanting to move, to both sides of the river, downtown, whether that's on the Little Rock side or Argenta. So it's very exciting times.
That latest Metro Plan study that just came out about 2 weeks ago,
yes,
looking at the last 3 years worth of demographic growth, actually showed that North Little Rock had the highest growth of any city in the Metro Plan region. That's pretty impressive.
Well, it is it's exciting to hear, and it is impressive, and people want to be able to, you know, work, live, and, you know, shop, entertain, all within walking distance, and that's, and we're really seeing that play out. And it's not just the college age young people or the retired people. There's a lot of people with families that are moving to Argenta, which is exciting. It's not dictated by one specific demographic. It's across the board.
Sounds like you've got some projects in the works here. We're going to talk about that. Yeah. Let's talk about this big one that was announced this last week. You're not necessarily involved in this other than just being supportive of it, but the Argenta Innovation Center. I believe we've got a graphic to kind of pull up what this does here. It's basically three kind of components. The mm-hmm. Silver Mine is an entrepreneur yep. exchange. You've got the Fab Lab, where finding ways to make technology more tangible yeah. and useful, bring it to the marketplace and do some things. And you got the Art Connection, which is really geared towards students yeah. in North Little Rock and the arts program. So how does all of that kind of work together in your mind to create an environment for business startups?
Well, it's just a component of an overall neighborhood plan to really have a thriving, creative, strong core. And to do that, you know, the key is to, we got to attract the talent, we got to retain it, and we got to grow it. And what this is so significant in doing is it's kind of taking three different creative components and putting them in one space, that the three of them kind of hit creativity from a different angle. But mm-hmm. when you combine them together, the power of that is really going to be significant. And I think it's not only significant for just Argenta, but you know the city of North Little Rock, you know, the city of Little Rock, all of Central Arkansas, and really the state. And this is, you know, the first of, hopefully, as our state really takes off in this fashion. I mean, we're a home. I mean, Arkansas is the home of entrepreneurs. I mean, we're the state that does it better than anyone else.
You're looking for the next Sam Walton.
We're looking for the next many, many Sam Waltons.
Greg Nabholz is a developer in Central Arkansas and one of the guiding forces behind the Fab Lab and other entrepreneurial concepts in the state. You can learn more about it at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. Friday night, the Fayetteville Public Library will host the Northwest Arkansas premiere of the documentary Ain't In It For My Health, a film about Levon Helm. Helm, an Arkansas native, was, of course, the drummer and a vocalist for the band, but also a legendary storyteller and host for his midnight ramble shows at his farm in Woodstock, New York. The documentary was directed by Jacob Hatley and was finally released after years of work and hundreds of hours of footage. Jacob Hatley is with me on the phone. Jacob, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thanks for having me.
What eventually became the film I Ain't In It For My Health started with, well, kind of started, didn't it, with an invitation to go to the doctor with Levon?
Well, we were acquainted with each other a little before then. We had done a music video with him, and I had tried to drop as many hints as I could while we were there that we should be doing a lot more than a music video, and that if he were ever willing, I would, at the drop of a hat, be more than happy to, move on out to Woodstock and make a real film with it. So I think he had thought about it, and I think when he invited us to come to the doctor, that was his way of saying, let's do it.
You just used the phrase, moving on up to Woodstock. That's what you did. You moved to Woodstock to do what I think you thought would be a several-month operation.
Well, I didn't think it would take more than 6 months, but I was incredibly naive. I mean, it was, you know, it's the first feature film that I've made, and I was just foolish, you know. It was especially given Levon, there was no way that was. After 6 months, we had maybe about, you know, 10 minutes of what you see in the actual film.
So then, what do you do? You've got 6 months, and I don't know how much capital you'd raise, but.
Yeah, well, we thought we were in a sweet spot. We had a good budget for 6 months of shooting, and we were going to pay ourselves and rent a little place in Woodstock, and you know, we were going to make it like a real professional production. And then after 6 months, we realized that the money was almost out, and we didn't have a film, and that we weren't going to be able to rent a place. So, you know, we moved into his barn. and those who were still willing to work for free stuck around, and we, you know, spent another 2.5 years there.
Now,
on and off.
Right. Now, I would think, as you're making a documentary, on one hand, this is great. You're on Levon's land. I mean, you're going to have, if not unfettered access, you're going to be very close.
That's right, yeah. I mean, you know, Levon didn't do much according to a schedule. You didn't plan to shoot at 4 o'clock on Thursday. You just kind of had to be there, you know, and you just had to be ready, you know, when things were happening and when he was in a certain kind of mood. So we just kept the camera on a tripod with a tape loaded in there, and we just were at the ready, you know.
Would there be days in a row where you wouldn't tape at all?
There'd be weeks in a row where we wouldn't tape at all. Yeah.
I'm curious, what would you be doing at that time?
Pulling my hair out. That's what I was doing. And, you know, unable to do the one thing that Levon asked of me most, which was just to relax and enjoy ourselves, which is something I found it hard to do often, knowing that, you know, we needed this and we needed that. But you have to, you know, you had to accept that it's going to move at its own pace.
One thing I really like is it's not a retrospective. It's not, here is the career of Levon Helm. As fascinating a career as it is to go from Turkey Scratch to the band to Woodstock and the Midnight Ramble, this was more about Levon at the time you were with him.
Yeah, it's a very kind of fly-on-the-wall, direct, you know, direct, as much as possible, direct cinema approach where we just kind of have a character profile. I mean, I know that, you know, when you look up the movie, it's going to be filed under rock documentaries, and I understand that a lot of people are going to see the movie because they're fans of the music and they want to hear the music, and that's great, you know, whatever brings the audience in. It's, for me, though, it's not a music documentary, and it's a character piece.
How did the filming work? You said there'd be days, weeks, where you wouldn't do anything. Then would he happen to come to the barn or give you a holler and say, let's do something?
No, it was never let's do something. I mean, the trick, I guess, to making the film with him is not acknowledging that you were doing anything. Just kind of seeing and allowing everyone around you to, or everyone in the scene to kind of forget that the cameras were there and be incredibly mad. I mean, you know, when you see the film, they're writing song, you know, and he's dealing with some decisions he has to make about whether to go to the Grammys or not and things like that. So those are just, you don't plan for those things. You just have to, be there, you know.
So I guess then that's got to be tough because you're not prompting then anything that's of the conversation or trying not to.
When you can, you want to steer. You know that there are lingering questions that your film is dealing with, and when you can, you want to kind of just sneak in something that'll steer the conversation in the right direction, or hopefully cause him to address it. You know, in the conversation, but you can't. You know, for the kind of film this was, which is not an interview-driven film, you know, you can't ever feel like someone is addressing the camera or addressing someone just off the camera. Everything has to stay naturalistic. And so that was the trick, you know, trying to very subtly, slyly steer conversations and address things without imposing yourself.
One of the highlights of the film is when another Arkansan, Billy Bob Thornton, comes in. That turns into something else. That's great.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know that whole thing about, you know, they say not to meet your idols, you know, but they might disappoint you. But he did not disappoint. It was amazing to get to be in the room with him.
And there's this conversation that happens, and it looks like you have a two-camera shoot going then.
That was the one time we brought in a second shooter. Yeah, we had two cameras on that. Because we knew that Billy Bob was, you know, the one thing I said was like, look, you know, to his manager, really, can we please just, no matter what, promise to, because there were a lot of people there that night, you know, and can we just get everybody out of the room for 30 minutes and let them sit down and talk without any, you know, without any pressure to be somewhere else or dealing with logistics of who's going to perform what that night, whatever. Can we just let them sit, you know, uninterrupted and hang out? That's why, and I promise I won't impose myself outside of that at all. And so we managed to get 30 minutes, thanks to Barbara O'Brien, his manager, who helped us like every step of the way with this film. And so that's how it came out.
What was that like to be in the room? I mean, you've got these two who are wonderful storytellers, come from the same part of the planet, and they just seem so relaxed, and nothing seems staged at all. It's just like happening in front of you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. You know, you try not to make a sound. You know, you try just to hope that people have forgotten that you're there. You know, I was shooting one camera, and Adam Kimmel was shooting another, who's a great cinematographer, who shot Capote, and was actually up there that weekend and agreed to shoot the scene. And so it was two of us holding a camera and a sound guy, and, you know, we just got lost in it.
After more than 2.5 years, how much footage did you end up with?
About 400 hours.
Wow.
But, you know, it does sound like a lot, but if you ask, I think, a lot of other documentary filmmakers, when you're making a kind of verite documentary, I don't really think it's that much. Mm. I think it's about par for the course.
So, knowing now what you didn't know then, would you do it all over again?
Oh, man, of course. Of course. You know, I mean, I got to be his friend, you know.
Do you think he would tell you to relax. Do you think you're a more patient person because of this project?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's, you know, I went to film school and everything, and I learned a lot more making this film than I did going to film school. That's for sure.
Jacob Hatley directed the documentary Ain't In It For My Health, a film about Levon Helm. The film will have its Northwest Arkansas premiere Friday night at the Fayetteville Public Library. A panel discussion with some of Levon Helm's friends and fellow musicians from Arkansas will follow. Jacob, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
He's lost all his corn, and now where's the money to pay off his loan? He lost all his corn, can't pay off his loan. He lost all his corn. Well, a poor old dirt farmer.
The song Poor Old Dirt Farmer was the tune Jacob Hatley was hired to direct the music video for. It's the song that led to the friendship with Levon Helm and the eventual documentary. There will be additional showings of the movie at the library on Saturday, August 24th at 11 a.m. in conjunction with the Fayetteville Roots Festival. Friday, September 20th at 2 p.m. during Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. and then again Thursday night, September 26th at 6 p.m. For more information about the film or the showing times, you can go to the library's website, faylib.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. When Joe Neal is not out in the field counting and recording birds, he's at home counting and recording birds.
My neighborhood is one of the older ones in Fayetteville. College Avenue is nearby, and many homes date from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. Trees have grown large over the years, a pleasing green. Oh, wow, there are the new neighbors. The new family here in the green goes by the name Corvid. No, I didn't see it on their mailbox, unless it might be airmail. They're American crows, members of a big bird family, the Corvids. I hope you won't feel my introduction just way too corny. Yes, the new neighbors are birds. The young'uns are out in my yard right now. I hear begging, croaks, and all manner of snaps and pops. I'm unsure which birds are making small talk. Maybe it's the young. Maybe it's the old one watching from up in the cottonwood, telling them to quiet down. I saw them scouting my yard last winter before they moved in. Then I saw a big, roundish mass of sticks and an old cedar down in an isolated corner of the yard. I was gone much of the spring on various birding adventures. Now the young Corvids are out of the nest. The folks are escorting them all around the neighborhood. In the following recording, you hear crows, plus blue jays devoutly watching everything. From the excited, "Jay! Jay!" I assume they haven't made up their minds about the new neighbors. Right now, my neighborhood is a jungle of caw, caw, caw. A crow perched two blocks away has spotted a cat. Up goes caw, caw. Someone else of this black-feathered tribe has spotted a snake. Up goes caw, caw. Close up in the trees around my house, I hear the gargle snaps and shallow trial calls, relatively soft, of youngsters. The watch crow on my roof cocks an eye and listens. All in a day's work, raising the next crow generation. Caw, caw, caw.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas memoir, is published by Half Acre Press. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Angela Grajeda.
Some congratulations in order.
Yes.
For all kinds of people.
All kinds of people.
The Springdale paramedics, or three Springdale paramedics, have come back from the annual Arkansas EMT Association Conference in Hot Springs with awards. Those paramedics include Zedok Crabb, Matt Chakanaka, and Caleb Bettis. Matt and Caleb won first place in the paramedic competition. Earlier this morning, I talked with James Hales, who is the battalion captain for training services with the Springdale Fire Department. He told me that competition involves a scenario. You're paramedics, and you're told instantly what has happened, go in and treat the injuries. This particular one this year was at a tire shop where a tire had blown up. There was a patient with a popped lung. They apparently did everything right and would have saved the patient.
Well, perfect. Sounds great. Congratulations to them. Also, the University of Arkansas Press has announced the winners and finalists for the 2014 Miller Williams Arkansas Poetry Prize. For the first time since the $5,000 prize was started in 2010, there are two co-winners along with two finalists.
Steve Scafidi, a cabinet maker from Summit Point, West Virginia, and the author of two books of poetry, was one of the co-winners for his book, To the Bramble and the Briar. It's a book of poems about Abraham Lincoln.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Vandana Khanna was selected as a co-winner. She's originally from New Delhi, currently an instructor at USC.
And her winning book, Afternoon Masala, focuses on the flash and spectacle of Bollywood films and will be her second book of poetry.
So Abraham Lincoln and Bollywood films.
There you go.
Nice co-winners.
And they'll equally share the $5,000 prize.
Finalists for the 2014 award were Andrew McFadyen Ketchum and Catherine Young. McFadyen Ketchum, a lecturer at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's the editor of Apocalypse Now, Poems and Prose from the End of Days. His winning book, Ghost Gear, chronicles his coming of age in a working class neighborhood in Nashville.
And finalist Catherine Young, she's from Arlington, Virginia, and is a lecturer at the University of Maryland at College Park. She's the author of two books of poetry. Her winning book, Day of the Border Guards, is set in Russia and the countries of the former Soviet Union and explores both Russian and North American poetic traditions.
The two winning and two finalist books published in the spring by the U of A Press.
So something to look forward to there.
Yes.
And congratulations to the Young Actors Guild in Fort Smith. The group has received 5 National Youth Arts Awards for their production of Les Miserables last summer. The awards include Outstanding Production, Supporting Actor in a Musical Awards for Hunter Doohan and Grant Harper, Best Ensemble and Best Direction for Missy Gibson. The production also earned 7 additional nominations for acting. There will be an awards ceremony held in New York City Sunday, August 18th.
Congratulations all the way around.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, train derailments in Louisiana, Spain, France, Switzerland, and Canada. What needs to be done to make railways safer? Also, Sarah Lee Guthrie has a new album and stories of what it felt like to grow up the daughter of folk singer Arlo Guthrie.
I always felt like we were like the Addams Family or something. You know, we were so weird.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now this afternoon, beginning at 1 on KUAF.
Take me to the carnival. Let me ride the rides. Buy me a red balloon and some sweet potato fries. I don't care how long we stay, as long as we can see everything there is to see.
Carnival, the sophomore album by Nora Jane Struthers and The Party Line, is everything I want from a classic Americana singer-songwriter. The album, which debuted earlier this year, has plenty of banjo, mandolin, and fiddle, as well as references to sweet potato fries, farms, and advice from Mama and Daddy to make my down-home heart smile. Carnival is a 14-track album produced by Brent Truitt and issued on Struthers' own label, Blue Pig Music. The Virginia-born musician attended NYU's Steinhardt School of Education and taught at a charter school in Brooklyn while performing in New York clubs. She made her recording debut in Dirt Road Sweetheart, a duo with her father, which released the album I Heard the Bluebird Sing in 2008. Shortly thereafter, Struthers relocated to Nashville and released her solo self-titled debut album in 2010. Her latest album, Carnival, is a result of a successful Kickstarter campaign, which was organized to help fund the creation of the project. Earlier this summer, in a story focusing on the new wave of female country artists, NPR's Ann Powers called Nora Jane Struthers quietly brilliant and included Carnival in her list of the year's best albums. Struthers' voice is warm and inviting and makes me want to sit cross-legged on the floor while she tells me stories about simple, enjoyable adventures like going on a bike ride or attending a barn dance.
Some girls, they like walking, courting around the square, showing off the fine shoes, the ribbons in their hair. But you won't catch me walking out on a night so grand. I'll be kicking up my feet down at the old barn dance. Twirl me round, Johnny, twirl me round, Joe, twirl me round, Johnny, don't.
Although Struthers sometimes sings of things that seem to have happened long ago, they are not without relevance to the modern world. In the song titled Party Line, for example, the singer discusses the introduction of a new telephone system and laments why people no longer come to call. That could also be applied to today's society, where people are so connected through the digital world that it can be easy to forget the value of face-to-face interaction.
Imagine my surprise when they came down the drive with that big spool of electric wire. Didn't understand exactly what they meant, but they said,
when we're finished, you can talk with all your friends
right inside our own house without going out.
Struthers is an excellent storyteller, and each song paints a unique picture, which, according to the artist's website, was her goal with this new album. She says when you go to a carnival, you go into a sideshow tent, and on every stage, you find a different person with a different story. With Carnival, Struthers says she's trying to craft vignettes, and in some cases, more developed narratives about imaginary people's lives. An example of one of those more developed narratives is the song Two Women. At 5 minutes and 31 seconds, the track is the longest on the album, but a well-crafted story about a tobacco plantation owner's relationship with two women makes it worth listening to every second of the song.
They say when he marry, he's pretty blind. Even the horses drank champagne. Pistol and a blade. He takes his supper across from pretty Emmeline, then pays his nightly visit to his slave.
On her website, Struthers says she realized she was writing a collection of story songs from a female perspective and was able to arrange them chronologically so the album has a narrative from girlhood to death. One of the songs that offers a glimpse into a little girl's life is Jack of Diamonds.
I walked to school on Monday, and when I stepped in the door, the other girls were gathered in a circle on the floor. Their slates and books were resting dejected upon their desks. Their skirts bloomed out around them like the late spring tulips. Yeah, their skirts bloomed out around them like the late spring tulips. Henrietta glanced up, called to come and see. Ponytails all was revealed to me. A shiny deck of playing cards was strewn upon the ground. Hastily we snatched them up as the bell began to sound. Yeah, hastily we snatched them up as the bell began to sound.
Carnival by Nora Jane Struthers and the Party Line is available now. You can catch Nora Jane Struthers and the Party Line live August 23rd and 24th at George's Majestic Lounge as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. More information about the event is available at FayettevilleRoots.com. More information about the band is available at NoraJaneStruthers.com.
When I was a baby child, my mama rocked me side to side. She set me down, I start to crawl. Ever since then, been traveling on. Traveling on, I am not afraid of traveling on. I am not afraid of traveling, traveling on.
It is Tuesday, August 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Speaking of time flying.
As you often do, yes.
As we did yesterday. Time has flown to the 115th Tottytown Grape Festival.
I have asked you this, I think, before, and I think I've even asked Susan Young at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. This has got to be the longest annual formal traditional event in Northwest Arkansas.
Oh, good heavens, I'd think so.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what would be longer. It starts today and continues through next weekend around St. Joseph Catholic Church in Tottytown. And tonight is Carnival Arm Band Night, a place I won't be. There's a grape stomp from 7 to 9.
Always fun.
And there's live music at 7 and more live music at 9. Lions May Cry at 7 and Backroad Anthem at 9.
Backroad Anthem, Antoinette talked to them in the Furman Garner Performance Studio a few weeks ago. Great, great guys.
Then coming up tomorrow, of course, more carnival, more grape stomping. The band Paper Jam at 7 and Joel Krause at 9. On Thursday, the church tours start, the arts and crafts fair starts, the spaghetti dinners start.
And there's a lot of spaghetti.
Okay, excuse me for a second. More carnival rides, which after the spaghetti sounds like such a bad idea.
Yeah, reverse that, if at all.
Yeah. And the music is Brian Odle and Hillbilly Underground and Parmalee at 9. Then on Friday, church tours, arts and crafts, spaghetti dinners, carnival rides. The music is Time Machine at 7. And Live Fire, the 395th Army Band at 9:30. On Saturday, a fun run, a kids run, arts and crafts, carnival armbands, more spaghetti, music by Kyla Horton Stevens at 6. The Downtown Live Wires at 7. And Colin Ray is their headliner at 9.
And this is all, if I'm not mistaken, relatively inexpensive.
All of this is free, except anything that you buy to eat or drink or buy at the Arts and Crafts Festival.
So the music's free?
Yes.
That is relatively inexpensive.
That's pretty inexpensive.
That's about as inexpensive as you get.
And you can find out more at TawnytownGreatFestival.com.
Thank you, Tawnytown. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jane, Missouri.
Jane, Missouri. Jane, Missouri has grown in the last several years.
It really has.
It used to be tiny.
It's much bigger now.
It is much bigger now. Ozarks at Large, underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes. That includes the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, plus the Roots Festival main stage. The drawing is Friday, August 16th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available at KUAF.com. You have plans to go to the Tawnytown Grape Festival?
I do. I think my boyfriend and I have plans to go on Thursday. I don't know how I've gotten away with this, but I've never done the spaghetti and fried chicken.
So you've been to the festival?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the first things you do when you move here.
Right.
I'm sure when we first moved back here, my parents hauled all four of us out there and ate some grape ice cream. I know we had family in town last year, and we hauled them out there for the grape ice cream. But we did not do the spaghetti, and I've never done that. So that's the plan.
Okay.
That's my plan.
Well, it's a good plan.
It's a good plan. I know there's a lot of waiting, but I understand it's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as I don't get there and wait a very long time and then get told, sorry, all we have is grape ice cream. I mean, though, grape ice cream is an excellent consolation prize.
Right.
I do love me some fried chicken.
Well, fried chicken, spaghetti?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, I've never been big on spaghetti. It depends. I think it has a lot to do with sauce and things. As a kid, I wouldn't eat it.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Because for many kids, myself included, that was like the number one.
That was the number one thing for my sister. But I was never really big on spaghetti. I think it's maybe just the sauce, because as I've gotten older, I'll eat it and whatever. But it's never been my first choice. But I'm very intrigued by the idea of fried chicken and spaghetti.
Well, you're going to have it on the same plate Thursday night.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
That's the plan.
Okay. All right.
That's the plan.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back tomorrow with another brand new edition of the program.
Thanks for listening.